the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Sporting News Magazine has on its front cover the word losing. And that is not often the word that you see on the front cover of a sporting magazine, but it certainly fits today because let's just consider the way it works today. You get up on Tuesday morning after the NCAA tournament. You're getting up either a Kansas player or a Memphis player. How different is that world? If you were watching last night, what an incredible game. I'm not a basketball fan, but I got to tell you, you got to love a game like that, that in the last seconds of seconds goes into overtime. It's absolutely incredible. That three-point shot that put the game into overtime, and then you see what happens, and then you watch, and I found this very fascinating, you watch what's going on the bench. Kansas, late into overtime, really does figure out it's going to win. Memphis and the Memphis players clearly understand at this point it's going to take a miracle. Look at the faces. Look at the body language. On the Memphis bench, all of a sudden you started having players put their heads into their hands. On the other side, everybody standing up, getting ready to cheer. How, from a Christian worldview perspective, do we handle winning and losing? And it's not just about athletics. It's about virtually every arena of life. What do we do with winning and losing? How do we measure excellence? How do we hold ourselves to excellence? And how do we handle a competitive world in which there are, in the end, in a tournament like that, winners and losers? How do we help our kids to do the same? That's going to be the conversation today on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. When we come back, we're going to have a really interesting conversation about this, and we're going to be listening to some of what took place last night, and we're going to be listening to what some folks across America are saying in the wake of winning and losing. First, to review some issues in the news, from Great Britain comes the report that the fury of some Muslim citizens has forced schools to shelve anti-homophobia storybooks. That's the way the headline reads for five-year-olds. Now, let's backtrack just a few moments. These books are out there. We've talked about them on this program. It goes back now almost 20 years to controversies over books with titles like Heather Has Two Mommies and Daddy's Roommate. And then one we've talked about here on this program is On the Line here in Great Britain. It's the storybook entitled King and King. It's a fairy tale about a prince who turns down three princesses before marrying one of their brothers. So King and King turns out to begin with Prince and Prince. The prince that doesn't want a princess, he wants another prince. Another one of the books that is of controversy there in Great Britain is one we've also talked about here on this program. It is entitled And Tango Makes Three, which is about two male penguins who fall in love at a New York zoo. In Bristol, in England, this has become a raging controversy in a couple of schools where the majority of the children and the families involved are Muslim. That is the Easton Primary School and the Bannerman Road Community School. They're both in Bristol. These books have been pulled out, and I want you to listen to what it says here in terms of the news report as to why. I'm reading directly from the Daily Mail. It says, the decision was made to enable the schools to operate safely after parents voiced their concerns at meetings. Now, when we think about this, let's just think about, first of all, the controversy here in the United States. Because time and time again, you've had groups like the American Library Association, you've had educational groups and others who have insisted that these books belong in the library, they have to be in the library. You've had Christian families, conservative families, several families, many families complain about the presence of these books. And clearly they're complaining about the fact that when children see this, the whole agenda is to make it appear normal. Something that, of course, Christian parents do not believe should be considered as normal. But now, even as in the United States of America, we are told the books must remain in Great Britain, which is even more liberal on this issue than many locales in the United States. The books are being taken out because of the threat of violence. Let me read to you from one section of this story. Farouk Sadiq, who is Community Development Officer for the Muslim Cultural Society, And he's also a governor at Bannerman Road, that is the school, so there were concerns about whether the stories were appropriate for young children. Listen to his words here. He says, the main issue here was a total lack of consultation with parents. The schools refused to deal with the parents and were completely authoritarian. The agenda was to reduce homophobic bullying, and all the parents said they were not against that side of it, but parents were saying to us, quote, our child is coming home and talking about same-sex relationships when we haven't even talked about heterosexual relationships with them yet, end quote. A couple of thoughts about this. Number one, we're talking about five-year-olds here. Five-year-olds coming home talking about same-sex sexual relationships, as these parents are saying, Muslim parents in this case, we haven't even talked to them about heterosexual sexual relationships yet. And to that, I would simply say, Muslim or Christian, that's good parenting. Five-year-olds don't need to know about this. As a matter of fact, I would argue that five-year-olds need not to know about this. Now, I don't know all that we should consider out of this story, but I tell you, it is very interesting that in Great Britain, it was not conservative Christian parents who raised this alarm. It was Muslim parents. And it is a reminder that there in Great Britain, there are many communities which now have a majority of Muslims. And the books were taken out not because the educators or the schools agreed that the books did not belong there in the first place, but because they said they were afraid of violence, or at least they used the words operate safely as their motivation. I don't know where the story is going to go in Great Britain, but I do tell you, I find it very interesting. And this is another reminder to us that the Muslim world looks at the West as increasingly decadent, and we keep giving the Muslim world ample evidence of the decadence that they believe is at the very heart of this culture. And when you start looking at an issue like this, it's just a reminder that even as there are people in the United States who try to say, look, this is just a local controversy, this is just a red state controversy, this is just a controversy that is a minority of parents who just won't go along with the politically correct flow. Well, just remember, it's not just here, and it's not just conservative Christian parents. It's also Muslim parents in Bristol, in Great Britain, and the controversy is on both sides of the Atlantic because in a globalized world, the controversy is virtually anywhere you go. Other issues in the news include some of what's going on in the name of education. A couple of stories here I find very interesting. First of all, a Colorado school district has dropped all grades. The Adams County School District, that is, the decision was made by the Adams County School District Board. They approved a new system that lets students progress at their own pace. District 50 there in Colorado. Listen to how the news report explains this. This is from Fox News. Students will need to master 10 skill levels to graduate. They could end up graduating earlier or later than fellow classmates. It just depends upon how long they need in order to master the skills. Now, I'm sure they must have some means for evaluating whether someone has mastered the skills if they're not going to use grades. But my fear and a concern in this is that what this really means is that failure is going to be covered up as something other than failure. When you start talking this way about getting rid of grades, you mean getting rid of any objective understanding. But they're getting rid of grades in every sense in the schools because, you know, grades mean a couple of things. It's a grade, the mark you get on a paper, and it's also a grade you're in, like first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade. This school district's getting rid of both. Getting rid of traditional letter grades and grade levels. It'll be interesting to see how this works out, but I'll tell you, I wouldn't be very hopeful. Because when you start looking at getting rid of grades, you get rid of an objective measure. You also have to wonder, how in the world are these kids going to go forward from this? They have no grades to turn in for a transcript for college admission, etc. Although at this point it does say that the first phase of this no grade level, no traditional letter grade system, will be for students in the grades K through 8. Meanwhile, from Seattle comes another story, also coming from Boston, indicating that as you're looking at school districts trying to figure out how to evaluate schools, not students, but schools, they too are running into some difficulty because it means they will have to, if they're going to be honest, admit that some schools are failing. So in Boston, the State Board of Education is considering labeling failing schools that have been known recently labeled as chronically underperforming, instead labeling them as priority one. It's all public relations. It's not that the schools are any better. It's not that the method of evaluation has changed. It's simply that they don't want to use the word failure. The state has 114 low-performing schools. They say they want to change the labels, critics say, because they simply want to appease overly sensitive educators. John Silber, former president of Boston University and chairman of the Board of Education, said, "It's all word games. Changing the name doesn't change the reality. I think Shakespeare had a good line. A rose by any other name would smell as sweet." He went on to say, "A skunk by any other name would stink." The labels are a matter of marketing and political correctness. But you have to wonder if it's not also an effort to mislead the public, who will not know that priority one and chronically underperforming are actually the same thing. We're going to be back to talk about how a Christian should understand the competitive world and the reality not only of winning, but of losing. To join the conversation, give us a call at 877-893-8255, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It's elation in Kansas and misery in Memphis after the NCAA tournament last night, men's basketball. The end of the game, after overtime, was 75-68 with the Jayhawks out on top, 20 years after their last national championship. We're not so much thinking about winning today as thinking about losing. Let's set up for exactly what happened last night. With 2.1 seconds left in the game, in regulation time, Memphis was on top, and it didn't look like there was any way that the Jayhawks could come back. It was a three-point game at that point, and then along came Mariel Chalmers with an amazing three-pointer at the very end of the game.
Collins driving, almost lost the handle. Chalmers for the tie. Got it for 2 seconds. Unbelievable. Dozier at midcourt for the championship. No, we're going to overtime in San Antonio.
It did go into overtime, and this is what happened at the end of the overtime.
A Kansas comeback for the history books. Rock Chalk Championship. Kansas takes the title.
So Bill Self and his team in Kansas are going home winners, big time. You could just imagine all that will take place, all the rallies, the parades, the adulation. And if anything, this is what makes an NCAA men's basketball head coach. This makes him forever, having won the top, the NCAA national trophy. What happens to Jim Calipari, the Memphis coach, and his team when they go back? Let's listen to what he had to say, because this is a coach who knew he really had the team, he really and his team had the game won.
Well, all I want to say is I thought we were national champs, and that's the great thing about college basketball and sports. Within 30 seconds, they make a play, and it's OT and it's on again.
I want to say that I thought both coaches were eloquent last night. Both were very, I thought, appropriate in their comments. I thought when Bill Self, in receiving the adulation and obviously the celebration of all that went on and through the awards with all the confetti coming down from the ceiling and all the award presentation, all the rest, I thought one of the classiest moves was when he said he wanted to thank all the previous coaches and players at Kansas for having made his team and his moment possible. And I thought just great credit to the team and to the fans and all the rest. And I think Jim Calipari there in Memphis also said the right things. But I think there were three words that Jim Calipari said that certainly are foremost in my mind. And those were the three honest words: "I'm really disappointed." The cover of Sporting News magazine caught my attention. I was passing through an airport just a few days ago. I saw it. It has a picture of an Indianapolis Colt with his head on the ground in a very clear posture of defeat. The word "losing" is across the cover. It says how we all cope with coming out on the short end. And if Sporting News magazine thinks that winning and losing is a big deal, and that losing is in particular an issue of particular concern, I wonder what you think about this. I particularly wonder what you would want to say right now to those Memphis players. What would you say? Now, let me tell you that there's a news story that came to my attention just a few minutes ago from Canada in which one sports analyst is saying the one thing they can't do is console themselves with a good season because they blew it in the end. This is how the story begins. It says the Memphis Tigers earned a place of history this season. Unfortunately, it's not the kind they wanted, the version that comes with a trophy. Instead, Memphis has a new claim as the home of the Blues after blowing an NCAA championship on Monday night's game. The Tigers, who led by 9 points with 2:12 left, now find little solace in a record 38 wins and 104 victories the past three seasons. These talented Tigers now find themselves lumped with the likes of Michigan's Fab Five and Houston's Phi Slamma Jamma as great teams that simply couldn't win it all. As Jim Calipari said, you have the kind of lead we had, you're supposed to win the game. All right, so what would you say to this coach? What would you say to these players? The players who had their heads in their hands last night, the players who were told, and by the way, I thought if you saw any of the pregame coverage, the speech that Bill Self gave to his players, I thought it was just a great piece of oratory, at least the parts of it I heard, and especially where he said, just remember the rest of your life, every single day, at some point that day, you're going to look back to tonight. And he said, I want to thank you in advance for what you're going to give out there on the floor to make this night possible. That's just good. That's good stuff. All right, so you start looking at that, you think, what are you going to say? Now, Sporting News Magazine, by the way, deals with it not only, of course, with the collegiate level, but even with Little League. And I think this is where it hits close to home for a lot of us as Christian families start thinking about this. Think about the kids out there playing soccer, playing anything. Little League. New Yorker cartoon is mentioned here in Sporting News. It says this. Shows a dad and his little boy, and the dad saying to the son, just remember, it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, unless you want daddy's love. Now, you get an awful lot of people who say, yep, I've been there, I've done that, I've heard that, I felt that. What do you say to these Memphis players? The phone number is 877-893-8255. How do we as Christians think about losing? Because in a competitive world, it's really easy to think about winning. But what about losing? And it's not just about athletic competition. What about an election? What about a major effort? What about a big career issue? Sometimes winning and losing is a moral question for us in a competitive world. It often is. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Beth, listening on WFIA, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Beth.
Hi. What I think it boils down to is this idea of glory, and that we as Christians, just we as human beings, we're made for glory. We're made to give glory to God. That's our purpose here on this earth. And that, you know, when you have a son or a daughter in a sport or anything, any kind of competitive thing in life, whether it's school or sports or career, that it's important that we kind of separate the two different types of glory. The first is the glory that we're going to have when we go to heaven and we give glory to God, the big glory. And the second is this sort of glory that points us towards that bigger glory, which is the glory that we think we might be able to find through work success or through winning a game or through, you know, being the person on the house with the block with the biggest house. And in true reality, as a Christian, that's not real glory. That's superficial sort of satisfaction for what the real glory is, win or lose. As a Christian, we look forward to the glory of sharing in the glory of the Lord with all of our Christian sisters and brothers.
You know, Beth, that was extremely articulate and almost a complete theology of competition and glory there. I want to ask you, though, a question. Let me first say, do you have any children?
I do. I have three daughters.
Okay, great. Let's say that one of them is in a soccer game. And she has an opportunity to win the whole game. She has an opportunity to win the playoff, win the tournament game. She's got a clear shot. She runs up to the ball. She gives it a kick, and it goes far to the right. She is sitting on the bench after having lost the game. The whole team is distraught, and she has her head in her hands. What do you say to her?
First of all, I love you no matter what. And I think you're a fantastic soccer player. And sometimes you get the bear, and sometimes the bear gets you on any given day. And more importantly, God loves you, no matter whether you've got that winning shot or don't have that winning shot. At that moment of glory, it would have been nice. But that's just not all the way that the world and your life is always going to work out. What you have to keep your eye on is the big prize.
Wow.
And that is that everything that you do, win and especially lose, that you are setting yourself forth as a witness to how you deal with that and what a Christian does and how a Christian
thanks.
Looks at their place.
Thanks so much, Beth. I'm sorry, we're going right into this break. What I got to tell you is that was super. And I got to tell you, I bet there are a lot of young men who wish that that you had an opportunity to whisper that in their ears last night as they were sitting on that Memphis bench. Back with your calls in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I think the difficulty here is trying to figure out exactly how we're supposed to think about this as Christians. That's why we need the discussion, because we know that as we are committed to a Christian worldview, it transforms every question. So we're never talking about just this or just that, but we're trying to put it together. And Beth certainly gave us the superstructure. She's exactly right. It's ultimately all about the glory of God. And yet, in the everyday living of life, we also recognize that let's just consider our role as parents or as a coach or as a friend. We want to say, go for it. You know, even the ancient Greeks had the virtue of arete, or excellence. You know, if you're going to do it well. If you're going to run, run fast. If you're going to fight, fight hard. If you're going to throw, you know, throw accurately. If you're going to jump, jump well. And that was just for earthly glory. And you know, as Beth said, that's only a hint of what real glory is like. But, you know, even the fallen, sinful world recognizes there is a glory in winning. And there is also a real sense of loss, of catastrophe, of tragedy in losing. But if you are going to have competition, you're going to have winners and losers. And, you know, I think it's important for us as Christians to say that we do believe that we ought to try to win in this kind of competition. I mean, I don't think we have any respect for a team that just goes out and doesn't try to win. Sporting News magazine, again, has some just fabulous stuff in this cover story. I do love that quote, that little squib at the bottom of the cartoon of the dad talking to his son, Little League. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose unless you want daddy's love. You know, I think an awful lot of little boys who felt that way. Maybe some bigger ones, too, you know, just in terms of why they're a person of worth. And one of the things we need to say to them is you're a person of worth before you were ever a player. But, you know, on the other hand, if you are a player, we need to play well. And if God's given you this ability, we want you to be a good steward of that ability. Just in terms of the history of sports, there's all kinds of fascinating stuff in there. This is the 100th anniversary of the last time the Chicago Cubs won a World Series. 100 years. That's a long drought. A lot of people are wondering why they even stay loyal to the team. Well, one fan watching the Cubs practice in Mesa, Arizona said this year, you know, I've been a fan of this team all my life, but I don't know how much more of this I can take. But still, I'm here. Well, she's there all right. That's a long way from Chicago. By the way, just as if we need the matter made even a little more complex, Sporting News points out that it's not just winning and losing. Sometimes it's those who have the reputation for, well, mediocrity. Listen to this. The Arizona Cardinals in NFL, whose lineage dates to 1898, making them older than Kurt Warner, are one of the six NFL franchises that have never sniffed a Super Bowl. But they've also gone whole years without being massively horrible. That's quite a way to put it. And, you know, that's a part of a competitive world, too. Sometimes you get winners and losers and those that don't even make it to the final game. Now, one of the things I think we'd all be saying to the Memphis players is, hey, you made it here. But then again, we have this new story coming out in which there are many people saying that's no consolation when you get there and you're ahead, and with 2 seconds left, you blow it. Let's go to Westerville, Ohio, where Roger's on the line. Go ahead, Roger.
Hey, Albert, how are you, man? I was just driving down the road in Iowa, and I heard your program, and, you know, I've played high school basketball for 30 years. I've got three children of my own. We've won state championship games, and we've lost heartbreakers. But, you know, when my kids were younger, when we had a win, or when we had a loss, we went out and got ice cream after the game. It was just, the thought was, hey, the game's over, you did your best, and it's time to get the ice cream, you know, and we went on to other things.
You know, Roger, I think that's another good word. It reminds me of what one dad said. He said, you know, win or lose, everybody gets snow cones. And so, you know, I think that works, by the way, with little kids. But let me ask you, because you have been a coach, and I haven't, so I want to ask you, you've done this, been there, done that. What would you say, though, in the locker room, to your Memphis players after last night's loss? What would you say to them? I don't think they want ice cream. So, but you know, following your same philosophy here, what would you say to them?
Well, first of all, I think as a Christian coach, you know, my philosophy is going to be that, you know, you went out there and the season was 38 games long and you had mostly success and you came up short tonight. I know it sucks right now, but bottom line is, you know, very few teams won 38 games. In fact, no one ever. And sure, things could have been different. They weren't. Let's have some class. Let's go out there and meet the press. Let's meet our parents. And let's, you know, do it the right way. This is what it's all about right now. Nothing you can do about the outcome of that game right now. Let's go out there and meet the people,
Yeah.
Not have a pity party. Let's do it with some class.
Well, I think holding your head high because you played with honor is another matter that needs to be really laid out here. It was an honorable thing to make it to this game. It's an honorable thing to walk away from it having done your best. It just doesn't seem quite as honorable. I think that's the problem. I think when you have a real spirit of competition, clearly it just doesn't feel quite as honorable when you're on the losing side. I think time is another matter here that's really important. To join the conversation, give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about, well, let's just call it a theology of losing. What does that look like? And how do we point to something that's, redemptive in this whole picture? We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Every day, most every day, if not every day, for the rest of your life, you will be reminded or think of this night. And I want to thank you in advance right now for the great memories it's going to be.
That was Kansas coach Bill Self, head coach of the NCAA national champions, the Kansas Jayhawks, talking before the game, as a matter of fact, as reporters were allowed within the locker room for his pregame speech. And it turned out to be a speech that really does fit the occasion. It didn't look like it was going to fit the occasion. With 2 minutes left in the game, it didn't look like they had any hope at all. But after only the third overtime in NCAA basketball history, they won it. And they won it big. They won it convincingly. They started out with a 7-point unanswered streak, and at that point, they pretty much had it. And then, you know, he's probably really glad he gave that speech beforehand. Now, I want to ask you, what if he had given that speech and they lost? What if every day, or he said almost every day of your lives, you're going to look back and remember this night? They're going to look back and think, that was the night we lost, rather than the night we won. What would you want to say to him? Let's think about a theology of losing. And in the final moments here of our program in this conversation, I'd like us to think about what we would really try to put together as a way of understanding competition, winning, and losing in a Christian perspective, not only in athletics, but in other areas of life. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's first of all talk about what the Christian worldview would have us to understand from the beginning. And that would be exactly as our caller Beth indicated at the beginning of the program today, that we are, first of all, made for the glory of God. There's something within us that cries out the knowledge that we are made in God's image. We are made for a glory that is greater than ourselves. We are called to something. We are yearning for something. We are told, even as the writer of Ecclesiastes puts it, God has put eternity into the hearts of man. There's something within us that calls us to a much bigger picture, to an understanding that we were made for something and for something great. And that's true. I think that's just a part of what it means to be made in the image of God. And we know as Christians, because we've been informed by the revelation of God, which is the scriptures, that it is indeed he who made us for his glory and an eternal glory, as a matter of fact, that is his glory. We are to share in his glory because we, first of all, glorify him. But then we all of a sudden have to understand that the world we live in is not a world that is simply sold out living for the glory of God. We're living in a fallen world. So the doctrine of sin has to enter our picture. And in a sinful world, competition is never simple. It's never altogether good, and it's never altogether bad. Competition can be good. It can call out the best in all of us. If there's only one company selling something, it doesn't have to be very good. If it has a competitor, it has to be much better. If the competitor makes a product that's better, at a better price and more available, it's going to win. There are winners and losers in almost every aspect of life. It starts out, very early, as we discover, and it continues throughout all of life. Competition can make you better. I mean, after all, the teams that are trying to get themselves up for the tournament are going to do a whole lot better than teams that have no such aspiration. Individual athletes the same way. The same thing can take place in an academic competition, in a business or political competition. You simply have to be better and better and better if you're going to stay competitive. That's good. But we also know that in a fallen world, competition can become distorted. Our ambitions are fallen. Our impulses are fallen. Competition can call out not only the best, but the worst. And that's what we're seeing right now, for instance, in Major League Baseball and the scandals over doping and all the rest. You're looking at people who say, look, winning is everything. As Vince Lombardi is often quoted to say, winning isn't Everything is the only thing. You know, there are people who live by that kind of motto, and so they'll cut any corner. And you all of a sudden discover that people cheat in athletic competition. People cheat in business, and that's led to some of the scandals that we have in the business world today, and certainly in sports as well. And so in a fallen world, we can't even trust our emotions in this. I think that's another important thing to say. We can't trust our emotions. And one important thing we need to say to a person who's lost in a competition like this, or a team like Memphis, or a little kid who just struck out, is to say, number one, objectively, you did strike out. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You can't blame someone else. Let's take responsibility here. It wasn't a bad call. You missed the ball 3 times in a row. And that's why you're sitting here with your head in your hands. You let the team down. Yeah, that's true. They were kind of counting on you. But you know what? You're going to learn from this. This isn't the end of your life. You were not created for this baseball game. Your life was not pointing to this moment as the great moment. And you see, that's where I think, when you think about the NCAA tournament last night, there are an awful lot of people who really do believe. I think there are players there. I'm maybe even the coaches. I don't know. I don't know their hearts. I don't know them personally. But you have to wonder how many people think that their life came to that moment. And that's just wrong. That's fundamentally wrong. We as Christians know that's wrong. They were not created for that moment. They were created for something far greater than that. And the judgment that was executed on that court last night, an athletic judgment, is only a bare hint to the judgment that is to come. A judgment that has everything to do with our sinfulness, not with our athletic or academic or business or political ability. I think also when you start thinking about competition, you also have to understand that Christianity transforms this whole question. And the Apostle Paul uses athletic metaphors, as does the book of Hebrews, in calling us, well, what does the book of Hebrews say? To run the race with endurance, to cast aside every fetter, to look unto what? To look under the trophy? No, to look under Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. And then you have the Apostle Paul writing to Timothy, his young protege in the ministry, saying, like a good athlete, you got to be willing to train. You've got to be willing to endure hardship. You've got to be willing to sacrifice for the high calling that is in Christ Jesus. And so there you realize, again, we're not competitive against each other. Christians aren't competitive against each other for the glory of God. That's a horrible misunderstanding. But as we become believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, we understand what our true purpose is, the reason for which we were created. We understand that it is an eternal purpose, and so we have to put winning and losing in an eschatological perspective. There's not going to be a single saint in heaven, not a single redeemed person, not a single Christian in heaven, having been glorified, who's going to go, you know, I have to look back at that game on April the 7th, 2008, and know that I was on the losing team. No one will be thinking that. They won't be thinking they were on the winning team either. All will be the undiluted and direct glory of God. Now, you either believe that or you don't. If you do believe that, and you're a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, then you can handle just about anything in this life. You can aspire to win and push yourself hard. And as the Apostle Paul says, endure hardship. As the writer of the book of Hebrews says, you can lay aside every encumbrance and run with endurance. But in the end, we don't win. In the end, from a Christian perspective, in the only sense that really matters, in the end, Christ wins for us. We share in His victory. And when you think about it, that really does transform the whole equation. No losers in heaven, not because we didn't lose. No losers in heaven, because Christ won. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Good discussion today. I appreciate the callers and all of you who are listening. And, of course, remember, you can always write us at albertmohler.com. Harrison did. He wrote in, made a good point. He said we need to probe the topic of idolatry. He said, and I'm reading from his message here, I think with sports there tends to be a temptation to idolatry of skill, money, acclaim, etc. Good point. And I think that's especially clear when you do understand that it's sad to think of how many young men in that room and on the teams that had played in all the levels of the tournament had really believed that that was the most important thing in the world. And that really is sad, because we really do have the problem of idolatry. It's not just in athletics. Let me say that very quickly. It's that way in politics, commerce. It is just pervasive. The heart is indeed an idol-making factory, and that's a part of this as well. You can always write us at albertmiller.com. You can just write us at that address or go to albertmiller.com and send us a mail message. We're always glad to hear from you. I'd love to know how you continue to think about an issue like this. We'll be posting this program along with all others at our website. You can go to albertmiller.com. You can sign up for the podcast. You can download, get the RSS feed. It's all available to you there free. Also, I want to give you a heads up on what's going to be happening the rest of this week. Tomorrow's Ask Anything Wednesday. Here in the center of the week, we'll talk about what's on your mind. And so you can get ready to call or go ahead and send your question ahead by email. We'll get to as many of your questions as possible. It could be about anything you want to talk about because you set the agenda for this central day of the week. On Thursday, we're going to be asking the question, would you really be okay with a gay kid? That's the question that's being asked by Details Magazine. That's a, well, let's just say it's a secular magazine for men. It has a lot to do with, well, it's classified as a men's lifestyle magazine. It's asking an honest question. Would it really be okay for you to have a gay kid? And it gets back to the fact that in this politically correct world, in a secular publication like this, they know their readers are supposed to say it wouldn't matter. But they also are raising the question, is that true? Fascinating discussion. We'll talk about that not only in terms of how the secular world is struggling with that kind of question, but with how we as Christians would have to answer that question as well, and how we'd have to define the terms in the first place. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about something many of you are talking about. It's a book entitled The Shack, a book by William P. Young. It is selling fast across this country. An awful lot of Christians are reading it, wondering about it, and asking the question, is it compatible with Christianity? Why are so many people reading this? And why is it so many Christians are endorsing it? And why is it that so many people say it's a book that's changing their lives? We'll be looking at this, and we'll be taking the measure of what all of this means. You can always suggest topics to us. There is something going on in your life, in your community, in your family, in your church, or to your knowledge, that probably ought to be the concern of others as well. Send it along to us. We always appreciate your suggestions. I'll see you tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.